This is the kind of job where one day you're going to steal a year, the next day you're in, Congress and, testifying before some committee and wearing a suit. And I figured at one point, it's just two examples of PPE, right?
Talk to me more about the suit as a PPE for Congress. I think that's very interesting.
Exposure.
It saves exposure. Howdy, everybody. Todd Conklin. Welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. I am your host for today. Well, it's another great day and a great week and a great year and great times and a bunch of other great stuff. You could put it all right in there as much as you want to. Today's podcast is pretty fun. I think you're going to enjoy this immensely. I learned much today. But as for me, what exciting news do I have to tell you? If you're going to the Berlin conference, the conference that we're having on human performance fundamentals, safety differently, and then the learning team workshop, which is September 5th, 6th, and 7th, I think that's right. I should look it up. The drop dead date on that, the last day to sign up, is in fact August 25th, 28th, 28th, 28th. Sorry, I got that wrong. 28th. So if you want to go, just contact me at office Todd Conklin, all one word, Gmail, and we'll get you lined up and hooked up for that. It looks like actually a bunch of people are signing up, which amazes me at every level. It really does. But it should be big fun and lots of excitement and joy for all people. So that's what we're looking for. That is pretty much the story. I don't have any really good airline stories. I know, disappointing, isn't it? I will tell you, I did something that you should know about. I took almost 2 full weeks and just hung out at the house and worked on projects and sat in the yard. Not in the yard. I actually had chairs. I mean, sat near the yard. Just kind of, I didn't wear shoes for a long time, which for me is amazing. It probably grossed you out. If you're an anti-foot person, you probably freaked out. But no, it was great. And I got to actually focus a lot of time on the podcast and do a little work on that as well. I am super proud of what we have done together. I can't even tell you how meaningful it is to be a part of this podcast journey with you. It's remarkable to me. So we've had, I don't even know how to tell you how many downloads of the podcast. I can tell you who the rock stars of the podcast are, but I think you've got your own opinion on that. So I don't want to influence you in any way, but I can tell you that it's been much more successful than I ever imagined it would be, and that's pretty cool. I think what makes it successful is just the fact that we sort of chat with each other. I mean, I think that's kind of where this all happens. And I don't know about you, but I've learned a ton doing these, just a ton, having all these conversations, listening to all these people, re-listening to people. It's been a fun journey. There's no question about it. Now, if we can get the rest of the world to step up and play right, God, what? Hello? Come on. Let's get some stuff happening here. Let's make some action going. So other than that, it's been a hot summer in the North American part of the world. And I've been to Europe many times this summer as well. And it strikes me as that it's relatively hot. It's hot. We're hot. But soon I'll be complaining that it's cold. So I should shut up and keep things going. Or not keep things going. Maybe that's a better way to not keep things going. So today's conversation is with somebody that I really want you to meet. And if you've not met him, this is a pretty good opportunity to do so. The internet was screwy, so I've worked this podcast a lot. There's a couple dropouts that I just left in because what he had to say was so important. This is the director of health, safety, and environment for the United States Steelworkers, for the Steelworkers Union. And he describes the union. I had him actually talk to me about the union a little bit because it's there's a lot going on in the steelworkers. This is Mike Wright, and Mike's been really a part of the safety picture at Steelworkers International for 40 years. And just having the chance to talk to him and listening to sort of the journey he's been on is quite remarkable. I mean, I think you'll find this podcast super, super interesting, and that's important as well. So let's pop into the podcast and see what happens. I'll talk more later at the end. I think you'll find that to be perfectly suitable and good. So without any further ado, this is Mike Wright from the Steelworkers on the Pre-Accident Podcast.
Well, we're the biggest industrial manufacturing union in North America. We have in the U.S. Canada, we claim about 850,000 members. Not all of them are working. Some are laid off, and people retain membership for some time after they leave employment. But you add all that up, and it's about 850,000. About a little over 2/3 in the U.S., a third in Canada. Some in the Caribbean, the Dutch possession of Aruba, for example. We're the predominant union in the steel industry, in the metals industry generally, both ferrous and non-ferrous. We have mines in both countries. We don't have coal mines in the U.S., but in the U.S. we have what MSHA confused calls metal non-metal mines, which means everything but coal. We do have some coal mines in Canada as well. We're the predominant union in the rubber industry, in the paper industry, in Canadian forestry. The oil refineries, we have some in transportation. We have about 50,000 members in healthcare, and then in certainly general manufacturing and a scattering of all kinds of other industries as well, which makes a safety and health job especially interesting and challenging because we deal with so many different industries and so many different exposures and so many different safety hazards. On the other hand, we can sometimes sort of use that knowledge to bring insights from one industry to another. And a good example of that is years ago, the rubber industry to try to come up with a way to free people who were caught in mills and calendars, sort of this equipment that, you know, that uses rollers basically, and that a worker can be pulled into. Oftentimes workers would survive, but it would be very hard to free them for a number of hours, sometimes find a way to do that real quickly. When we merged with the union that represented paper workers, and then when we began to represent paper workers, we discovered they had some of the same problems, and we were able to bring insights from the rubber industry to the paper industry. We discovered that those two industries didn't talk to each other, didn't have the same cultures. The only kind of common factor was us. So we can sometimes bring, like I said, insights from one industry to another.
And tell us about you.
Oh, well, I've been doing this job almost 40 years. I was a political activist back in the 1960s and got interested in doing health and safety work when I worked for a public interest group in Boston and finally decided that to do it, I needed to go back to school. So I went back to public health school, decided the place to work for me was a union, because we can represent people. We can, you know, help people whose employers don't necessarily want to provide the safest work conditions. And I kind of like that kind of work. Became the department head in 1984 and have been that pretty much ever since.
Wow. 40 years. What have been your, what have been your biggest challenges, you think?
When I joined, the prevailing view among industrial hygienists was that industrial hygiene was complicated, safety was easy. And I've come to learn it's just the opposite, that, safety is you're looking at the unexpected interaction of all kinds of different forces and factors. And I know you've written a lot about that. Industrial hygiene is more, you look at what somebody's exposed to, you figure out what the exposure is, and you can make some kind of estimate of the risk and what it would take to reduce that risk. But safety is more—it's more of a matrix. It's more multifunctional, and I think what I've really tried to look at, especially, is process safety, which is just an extension to me anyway of regular safety, but which is more complex yet, because low probability but very high consequence. And what got me, a little personal history, I guess, what really I think, changed my life in that regard was I was part of a team that several months afterwards went.
Hi, everybody. It's Todd. So at this point, the internet pretty much dumped completely. This is Internet Neutrality Day, so there's not much going on the internet. But what Mike said was he was a part of the team that went out and reviewed the event in Bhopal, India, at the Union Carbide facility.
And investigated the accident there, which, of course, was the worst industrial accident in history. And it was... it was really kind of a life-changing experience in terms of the complication of the accident, but also in terms of what it told us about safety really everywhere. When we came up with a pretty good accident scenario, what we thought was a pretty good accident scenario, and it had some influence in India, we realized that none of the things that led to the accident were against the law. None of them violated any OSHA or EPA regulation. And that's changed now, but it took a lot of work to change it.
That's remarkable. I mean, that story itself is remarkable in the way it sort of changed really the entire industry. When you guys think about, and part of what you do is programming, education, training, you do all those things, but a big part of what you do is investigations as well. How has that changed in the 40 years you've been doing investigations?
I think we've become a lot better at it. I have to say your work has been influential, as has that of other authors. People like, you know, James Reason and others. Become sophisticated really kind of a kind of fault tree analysis, and we've been using that for a while, but I think we're beginning to see that things aren't always as linear as that. We hadn't put that in a formal way into our accident investigations, but we see them. We see the system as a lot more complex. It isn't, you know, and I didn't want to say this right. It's we used to trade on what things, you know, what led to this accident. But a lot of what we're trying to do now is think about what needs to change. And that's often a lot more than this widget needs to be replaced, or they need to have a better maintenance program, or they need to have a better guard on this machine. But more and more, we're trying to look beyond that and say, okay, if the guard was missing, why was the guard missing? And to go back, you know, a number of steps, and then to see how the other factors and the way the work is organized really act with that problem, if that makes sense. So I think we've become kind of better at that than we were in the past. We also, I think, and still, we've fought very hard against behavioral safety, against the ideas that workers are, you know, that when you look at an accident, the first thing you looked at is how injured.
Todd, again, keeping up with our theme of crappy internet in New Mexico. What Mike was talking about here is the traditional belief that somehow the injured person chose to injure themselves.
To us, that's a totally wrong-headed approach. And it's one that really hurts safety, because the way we see it, I don't think we'll ever make headway until we understand that workers are the solution. Not the problem, but the solution. Not the thing that needs to be fixed, but the thing that will ultimately do the fixing. And but at the same time, we also recognize that the way people do their jobs is important. You know, it's even insulting to workers to say the way you work, the way you operate, what you do isn't important. People who run, for example, what's known as a pulpit, which is like a control room, about as much training as a 747 pilot. So you know, and people who work in oil refineries the same. And so the way that they do their jobs is clearly important. And to say it isn't is to deny their professionalism. But so what we prefer to look at is if somebody isn't, you know, isn't doing a good job, why is it? And we often, you know, in the first job, the first rule when you're looking at human factors is to try to remove the impediments to doing a good job. Things like faulty instrumentation, fatigue, conflicting job demands, excessive job demands, all those kinds of things. And second, of course, it's to arrange a workplace where, you know, understanding that we all make mistakes, a single mistake isn't going to get you killed. So I'm kind of rambling here, but that's sort of how we've tried to approach accident investigation and safety generally.
What do you see in the future? So you've got a really strong foundation upon which to ask this question. Where do you see safety going after you retire and head to the fishing hole for some full-time fishing activity?
Oh, I don't know. I think one of the things I think we need to do is to there are some jobs that are obviously where workers are being replaced by computers and machinery, and understanding, you know, apart from the all of the other kind of work related around that and the economic problems, it has major implications for safety. We've now had people killed by robots, and that's just kind of the tip of the iceberg. So the nature of work is changing kind of rapidly. There's pressure being put on workers these days than in the past. We'll go into a workplace and we'll see that they've got, you know, they really haven't got enough workers to do the job safely. And people are being stressed with overtime and you know, it's really easy to say, you know, management's screwed up there. They ought to do this. They ought to do that. But they're under enormous pressure because they know that if they can't, you know, lower their production costs to meet with the Chinese product, then they're out of business. And so, you know, responding. So safety and health issues really are also trade issues, and they're also very much issues in the macro economy. And I think that's something we need to understand more and more, and something that's going to be, you know, the workforce is also aging. Yeah. And that has its own issues. And young workers aren't being really trained to the extent that they need to be. There are a lot of challenges that very much impact health and safety, but also go beyond it.
If you could give advice based upon what you've learned to somebody taking over your job or somebody new starting in health and safety anywhere, what advice would you give them?
A couple things. One is understand that safety and health is not just a technical issue. That as much, you know, you may know a lot of industrial hygiene, you may know a lot of safety engineering, but unless you know how to solve a problem, and safety and health problem goes way beyond a technical solution. You know, you may know the right technical solution, but unless you know how to get the company you work for or the company you're bargaining with, as we bargain through labor unions, you know, unless you know how to get that done, the rest of the knowledge is just, you know, it is pretty useless. So, I have these discussions, for example, all the time with people who have done, you know, really terrific work on safety engineering and on, you know, assessing toxic substances and looking at risk and doing epidemiology and all that kind of stuff. And I always tell them, look, what what your research does is really critical. We safety and health issues are at base political issues. I don't just mean politics in terms of the president and Congress and the governors and all that thing. I mean as the understanding of exercise of power. If you can't get to put it most starkly, if you can't get a company to do what they may not want to do, but is the right thing, then you haven't made much difference. So that kind of understanding is the first thing I understand. It ain't just a technical issue.
Mike, thanks for 40 years, man. Thank you so much.
Well, it's been... Look, I think I've gotten a lot more out of this job than I've given to it. So it's been, you know, working with other safety and health folks, both for unions, and I've got a lot of really good friends who are on the corporate side who I enormously respect. And working with folks who sort of look at this in a systemic way, like you.
What's next for you?
Well, I don't know. I'm going to stick around for a while. We have a big safety and health conference every 18 months, and the next one's in March. And I'll probably stick around at least till then. But I don't, you know, I ain't going anywhere. I'm going to turn over the place to somebody else. But this gets in your blood. You can't really give it up completely. So I'll stay active, maybe do some writing, maybe be around for, you know, issues that I can help with.
Good. Let's see. I think writing's a great plan. Get some books out there, man. There's always room. It's a big pool. Come swimming.
No, I think I got some stuff to contribute.
Oh, you definitely do. Hey, thanks, man. So what'd you think? Huh? Man, there was more in that podcast, if you think about it, than a lot of other stuff, and way more than most of the meetings I go to. I can't even thank Mike enough. It's a great thing. When I got the opportunity to talk to him, I jumped on it for a bunch of reasons. One is he's just got an amazing amount of access to data. I mean, he's constantly working issues and learning. And that's the thing I like about Mike is that he's really focused on learning and improving, getting better. But, you know, the steelworkers have there's some challenges out there, and they know it. They have about 30 fatalities a year. They have serious injuries. They do high-risk work in high-risk environments under rapidly declining resource pools and lots of production pressure. And they've really taken it on as a very, very important goal to just create a world where less bad things happen. And they know the way to get there is by shifting that focus away from sort of how the person screwed up, who failed, to a much more compelling what failed question. And really where this takes you to is ultimately the answer. I mean, the answer really in this case is going to be different because the question's different. And I was on a conversation last night with an organization that had an event. And they terminated, they did not terminate the injured employee. They punished the injured employee. And then because I gave them kind of a weird look when they told me that they punished, they actually practiced progressive discipline on the injured employee. They said, well, but we didn't stop there. We also disciplined both of the supervisors that were in charge of the work. And they looked at me like that's a much more enlightened approach, that well, look what we did. We not only sent out a loud and clear deterrent message to the workforce by disciplining the injured person, but we also sent a clear message out to the leadership level, to the organization, that we also are going to discipline the supervisors that have the failure. And as you can imagine, the only question I could come up with is what did that fix? What improvements happened because you did that? And that conversation never goes well the first time. And it's not really very good the second or third time. But around the fourth or fifth time, it starts to make sense to people that that emotional need gets in the way of really that operational need. And that's what I think Mike speaks to. 40 years of experience, 40 years of really, really working in what must have been the largest technological shift and the largest paradigmatic shift in the way we think about operations and productions for the steelworkers ever. I'm sure that's always true, but there's been a tremendous amount of change in the last 40 years in industry, and Mike's been right there. He's been on the forefront, and I think that's a really important thing to talk to. Part of the reason Mike was on the podcast is because the steelworkers have really taken on the book Workplace Fatalities, the new book that I have out now. If you don't have it, it's time you get one. And they've asked some hard questions. Is the way we're looking at and actually managing fatal and serious events wrong? Is our paradigm wrong? Is our philosophy wrong? And that's kind of where they are now, which led to a bunch of letters and emails to me about the book, which led then to an opportunity to actually bring Mike on board and talk to him on the podcast, which is why I did it, because he is a great person to have on the podcast, a rock star, if you will, a absolute rock star. So that's the story from Santa Fe, New Mexico, home of Todrick Von Conklin. And I'm hanging out on a beautiful day this summer crafting some podcasts. And this is one of them. And I'm glad you got to enjoy it. I hope you get what you need. That's really important to me. Have as much fun as you possibly can. Learn something new every single day. Want to know what I learned today? This whole idea that people who run operation centers have as much training as a 747 driver is very, very interesting to me. In the industry I came from, that's absolutely true. And when you think of it that way, when you can sort of class shift work like that, that changes a lot of stuff. And of course, the last thing, for goodness sakes, be safe.